Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
If you do want to take a trip to America, you could think of doing something a bit different if you're a film buff. How would you like to stay at serial killer Buffalo's Bill's house? This is from Silence of the Lambs, because you can now stay at this three-story house, including the all-important basement, where Bill stitched his skin suits and kept poor Catherine Martin captive. There's no word if Precious the dog will be there, but you can go and stay in the Silence of the Lambs house. It's actually been over 30 years since Silence of the Lambs came out, so it can probably be called a classic movie at this stage. So we're going to discuss now the enduring appeal of it with Jory Lagerway, who is Associate Professor in Television Studies at UCD. Good afternoon, Jory.
Hi, Brendan. Thanks for having me.
So, in 1991, it was a massive cultural phenomenon, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Yeah, it had a massive box office. It earned $130 million just domestically. And it came out Valentine's Day weekend, which is a bit of an odd time for a serial killer horror movie to come out. But that might be part of why it was such a huge hit. It didn't have loads of competition at the moment. And once it had a little bit of word of mouth, people just flocked to the cinemas.
Because it wasn't set up to be a blockbuster. I mean, he wasn't really a hugely mainstream filmmaker, Jonathan Demme, in a way, was he? And it was kind of came out of left field, did it?
Yeah, it wasn't expected to do... It wasn't expected to be a big hit, let alone the massive hit and huge Oscar winner that it was. And traditionally, the film industry thinks of January and February as the time of the year to dump films.
Okay.
Films that it thinks isn't going to do very well. Oscar films tend to come out in the autumn and at the end of the year, so they're fresh in people's minds when they're voting for the nominations. And so, yeah, this was
positioned as a filler. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
So, terrible surprise to everyone.
Yeah, and look, you hate to use the word iconic, but it has kind of become iconic in terms of like a profound impact on the culture since like Moments from it and endlessly parodied and repeated and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's one of those films that just has these amazing performances that people have really latched onto. And I think once you hit a certain level of parody, then the parodies start being parodied and, you know, you start doing the performance that you saw on Saturday Night Live rather than the original performance, you know. So it definitely
we're thinking of fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Exactly. Yeah. And I actually just watched the film again this morning. That line, the delivery that he gives it, you know, it's this very strange accent. It's not a typical accent from anywhere that I've ever been. And so it seems it's a very hammy kind of performance, right? He gives it everything
he's
got.
This is Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
So where was he at that stage in his career? Like this was kind of an unusual film for him to do in a way, was it?
Do you know, I didn't look back at where this fits in his trajectory, but certainly it was huge for his and Jodie Foster's careers. And again, watching it this morning, it's peopled with loads of actors who 30 years on, you instantly recognize them as character players, you know, who went on to be like, oh, I saw them in that cop show, or I saw, you know, that you might not know their names, but you recognize them instantly. So it did really well for all of the actors, I think.
And in terms of then the kind of film it was it in a sense a new kind of horror film or a new kind of mainstream horror film?
Yeah, it was for sure. So horror would traditionally be thought of as kind of mass market throwaway, and especially kind of in the 80s, it was marketed at teenagers. We had lots of slasher films. And so this kind of realist approach and focusing on this really charismatic killer and it's as much a psychological thriller as it is a horror film, right? And so the two sort of big prestige blockbuster horror films before this would have been The Exorcist and Alien. And so horror would have been very much about monsters and the supernatural. And so to bring the horror into the real world, so to speak, I think added that layer of terror to viewers. At the time,
And Jodie Foster then, I guess, was a new kind of character, a female character in horror, was she?
Absolutely. Yeah, like we have Ripley going back to Alien, right? So she's not the first lead of a horror movie, a female lead of a horror movie. But she is this great character who kind of plays with our expectations. The opening scene of the film is, it helps also that Jodie Foster, the person, is very petite. She's a tiny little person.
Okay.
And so we see her in the first scene of the film running through the forest by herself. And in a horror movie, that character dies, right? That's the beginning of the horror movie. The girl running through the woods by herself dies. And here we learn, oh no, that's the FBI training course. And she goes into then the, you know, the school.
Langley.
She's dwarfed by all the men around her. She gets into a lift and there's, all the men are 6 foot tall and she's 5'2" or whatever. And that sort of sets the stage for how we're going to understand her character throughout the film. She's this tiny little woman who then goes on, of course, to solve the crime, kill the killer, and do all the things that you absolutely don't expect from a vulnerable woman in a horror film.
Yeah. And then Hopkins' character was a new type of, like, he wasn't this, just for people who haven't seen the film, he wasn't the serial killer. He was another killer who was helping her to solve the crime and feeding her bits and pieces. But a very nuanced, charming might be a strong word for it, but not a black and white character.
Yeah, I mean, this film gives us a kind of double whammy. We have two serial killers, one of whom is Anthony Hopkins and playing Hannibal Lecter, who's helping out the FBI. And I think charming is exactly the right word. From his sort of smooth tone of voice and the way he kind of lures Clarice in. Mm-hmm. And even the camera comes really, really close to his face. The close-ups on him are tighter than on Jodie Foster, for example, or really on anyone else. So we're invited into his brain, I think. And he kind of spools out information as and when he wants to. And so we're really put as viewers in his control. He kind of controls the story and the information. And he's also a very unusual killer. We see him reading Bon Appetit magazine. We see him sketching the Duomo in Florence, you know, listening to Bach. He's a very unusual guy. He comments on fashion, you know. He's this very erudite, well-educated. You know, maybe that's where the accent comes from. Maybe he's supposed to be, you know, European, whatever that means.
And it swept the board at the Oscars in 1992, won the so-called Big Five.
Yes, it won Best Picture, Director, Actor and Actress for Jodie Foster and Anthony Hopkins, and Best Adapted Screenplay for a guy called Ted Talley.
Okay, so critical and commercial success.
Absolutely.
None of the other Hannibal Lecter things really kind of repeated that success, did they? And there had been a Hannibal Lecter before that, hadn't there?
Yeah. There was a Michael Mann film in 1986 called Manhunter. And it focused on the Will Graham character, the FBI investigator, rather than so much on Hannibal Lecter. The most fun fact about that is that Will Graham was played by William Peterson, who went on to be Gil Grissom in the CSI TV show. But it looks now like an extended episode of Miami Vice. you know, it's not great. It's super dated. So that came before and after. It was, I think, trying to recapture the magic of Silence of the Lambs. And after the fact, it just wasn't possible anymore because Silence of the Lambs had done the work of being Silence of the Lambs, right? It had changed the landscape. It had made female characters in these kinds of roles, if not commonplace, at least something that we were accustomed to more or less. It had made horror and psychological thriller a serious genre. And so anything that came after was sort of repeating, and it didn't quite work out.
So it's an important film in the canon, is it?
Yeah. I mean, as much as I don't love the concept of a canon and like saying one film is big and important, I think that means we just kind of forget films that maybe didn't win some awards and things like that. But yeah, it is.
Okay, so if we accept there might be a canon, we accept
then,
that it might be.
Yeah, exactly.
So and there probably is, like, it does still resonate down the years. There's probably definitely a market for people who want to stay at Buffalo Bill's house, is there?
I would say, yeah, there is a market for fans of almost anything. And to have that experience for someone who really connected with the film as a young person, you know, would probably be really appealing.
Listen, before you go, Adrian Weckler said that nobody should go to Indiana. That's the most boring state in America. You did live there for a while.
I did. That's a hard agree.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, okay. It was awful. I lasted 8 months and then I chose to commute 100 miles to my job in Indiana rather than continue to live there.
That's bad. Okay, Jory Lagerway, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.